Good morning, everyone.
Welcome, everybody. Last week we had a request that we should not only resume the readings, we should also resume the custom of playing Sunil Das music and Mother's readings. So today we'll be starting like that. There'll be about 14, 15 minutes of music, and then we can start the reading. And we're reading in Book 7, Canto 6, Nirvana and the Discovery of the All-Negating Absolute. That begins page 532. Last week we read the end of Canto 5 of Book 7, the finding of the soul. And now the first lines of Canto 6, starting on page 532, describe the effect that this finding has on Savitri. Marie-Ange, would you read page 532? Starting at the beginning of the canto. Canto's called Nirvana and the Discovery of the All-Negating Absolute.
Is it 532? Nirvana and the Discovery of the All-Negative Absolute. Calm, slow sun, look down from tranquil heavens.
I'm giving her a microphone. Yes, please, go ahead.
Routed serenity will guard of retreat. The last rain had fled, murmuring across the woods, or felt a sibilant whisper mid the leaves, and the great blue enchantment of the sky covered the deep rapture of its mind. Its mellow splendor, unstressed by storm lit its firm womb for a luxury of warm, mild days. The night, golden treasure of autumnal moons, came floating, shipped through ripples of fairy air, came floating. And Savitri's life was glad, fulfilled, like earth is. She had found herself, she knew her being, being's end. Although her kingdom of marvelous change within remained unspoken in her secret heart, all that lived round her felt its magic charm. The trees' rustling voices told it to the winds. Flowers spoke in ardent hues and unknown joy. The birds' caroling became a canticle. The beasts forgot their strife and lived at ease, absorbed in the communion with the unseen. The mild ascetic of the wood received a sudden threatening of their lonely news. Bright vision of her inner state poured overflowing into her outward scene, made beautiful dull common natural things, and action wonderful and time divine. Even the smallest meanest work became a sweet or glad and glorious sacrament, an offering to the self of the great world, or a service to the one in each world.
Thank you. So this is a beautiful description of the state of Savitri's being as a result of the finding of her soul. It's as if the whole world is reflecting this experience. The sun, a calm, slow sun, looked down from these tranquil heavens. It's so peaceful. And the last rains, a routed, sullen rear guard of retreat, the last rains had fled, murmuring across the woods, or failed, a sibilant whisper among the leaves, amid the leaves. We remember that at the end of Canto 1, when Savitri first started to look, when she was first given the command to look into herself and find her soul, it was the end of the rainy season. And now this finding has, although it's taken us two cantos to read, or more, five cantos to read, it has all happened in quite a short time for Savitri, one or two days. Sibilant, it's the sound. So the rain, the last rain in the wet leaves, makes this kind of sound falling on the leaves. The great blue enchantment of the sky had recovered the deep rapture of its smile. So the rains are over, the sky is blue and full of sunshine, beautiful. And its mellow splendor that suggests autumn time after the rains. The moons are particularly beautiful, the autumn moons. And Savitri's life was glad, fulfilled like Earth's, just as the Earth's life seems to be fulfilled with this new season. Her life is fulfilled by this great discovery that she's made. She had found herself. She knew her being's aim. Naturally, she's keeping all this to herself, but the poet tells us that although her kingdom of marvelous change within remained unspoken in her secret breast, all that lived round her felt its magic's charm. The trees' rustling voices told it to the winds. They're giving the good news. The flowers spoke in ardent hues, in beautiful colors. The birds caroling, that singing of the birds, they also like it when the rain stops. Became a canticle, a sacred song. And even the animals forgot their strife, any conflict they might have, and they all lived at ease. And even the hermits and ascetics who are living in the woods around, they seem to feel the effects of this change also. They are absorbed in wide communion with the unseen. Those mild ascetics who are living in the woods there received a sudden greatening of their lonely muse. Their meditations get intensified as they're affected by this change. The bright perfection of Savitri's inner state poured overflowing into her outward scene, and it made beautiful even dull, common, natural things. It made action wonderful, time divine. Even the smallest, meanest work became a sweet, or glad and glorious sacrament. An offering, a sacrifice, an offering to the self of the great world, or a service to the one divine, in each and everything in the universe. Mita, you will read.
A light view of her heartbeat's dance community this happiness grew happier, shared with her by her touch, and grief became solace found when she drew above the cherished head of Satyavan. She saw not now fate's dark and lethal orb, a golden soap round a mystic sun, disclosed to her newborn predicting sight the cyclic rondure of a sovereign life. In her visions and deep-edged verities, in brief shiftings of the future's heavy scene, heavy screen, he lay not by a dolorous, a victim in the dismal answer of death, or home to blissful regions far from home, forgetting the sweetness of earth's warm delight, forgetting the passionate oneness of love's clasp, absorbed in the self-wrapped immortal's bliss. Always he was in her, a living soul that met her eyes with closed, enamored eyes, a living body near to her body, but now no longer in these great wild woods, in kinship with the days of bird and beast, and leveled to the bareness of earth's brown breast, but mid the thinking, high-built lives of men, in tapestried chambers and on crystal floors, in armored town or gardened pleasure walks, even in distance, closer than her thoughts, body to body near, soul near to soul, moving as if by a common breath and will. They were tied in the single circling of their days, together by love's inseparable like the earth and sky.
Thank you. We'll stop there. So the first lines continue that idea of the light of Savitri's inner experience spreading everywhere. A light invaded all from her being's life. Her heartbeats dance, communicated bliss, shared it, and for those around, happiness grew happier, shared with her and by her touch. And if there are people there or people in the world who are suffering from grief, grief found some solace if Savitri drew near to them. So now in this state, as she looks at Satyavan, she no longer sees this dark threat over his head, the threat of fate's dark and lethal orb threatening his death. Instead, she sees a golden circle round a mystic sun. And this seems to her a message telling her with her newborn predicting sight, now that all of her chakras have opened up, she can look into the future. Disclosed to her newborn predicting sight, the cyclic rondure of a sovereign life. She sees that he will live a whole life, a full life with all the parts of it, the youth and the middle age and the fulfillment and the old age. The whole life will be fulfilled. In her visions and her dreams, de-etched, veridical dreams, dreams which are indicating the truth. In her visions and deep-etched veridical dreams and in brief shiftings of the future's heavy screen, she gets some sight into the future just for moments. She sees Satyavan. He's not lying there under the threat of death, and he's not being carried far away from her into distant heavens, where he would forget the sweetness of earth's warm delight and maybe forget the passionate oneness of love's clasp, absolved, dissolved perhaps, in the self-wrapped immortal's bliss. That could happen, but it's not happening. Always he was with her. She feels his presence constantly, a living soul that met her eyes with close, enamored eyes. He's looking into her eyes with all his love. He's a living body near to her body's joy. That's how she sees him in the future. But no longer in this forest, no longer in these great wild woods, living in kinship and as a family with the days of bird and beast and leveled to the bareness of earth's brown breast. Very early in the poem, Sri Aurobindo describes to us this bareness of the life that Savitri was living in the forest. And here he refers to it again. Instead, looking into the future, she sees Satyavan surrounded by the high-built thinking lives of men in tapestried chambers, in beautiful palaces or mansions which are decorated and furnished with beautiful tapestries, or walking through towns, armored towns, or through garden pleasure walks. And in those visions of the future, she sees him, she experiences him, even in distance, closer than her thoughts. She's very closely united to him, body to body near, soul near to soul, moving as if by a common breath, as if they're breathing the same air and the same will. They're tied together in the single circling of their days. They are not separated. They are always together, held together by love's unseen atmosphere, inseparable like the earth is inseparable from the sky. This is how she sees their future prospects. Karen?
Once, as she said, Thus, for a while she trod the golden path. This was the sun before the abysmal night. Once, as she sat in deep, felicitous muse, still quivering from her lover's strong embrace, and made her joy a bridge twixt earth and abyss yawned suddenly. A vast and nameless fear dragged at her nerves. As drags a wild beast his half-slaughtered prey, it seemed to have no den from which it sprang. It was not hers, but hid its unseen cause. Then rushing came its vast and fearful form, formless dread, with shapeless, endless wings, filling the universe and the night with air, then blood the heavens. Rolling surge of silent death, it came curving down the sharp breaking glow, facing heaven with its enormous stride. It willed to expunge the choked and anguished air and end the fable of the joy of life. It seemed her very being to forbid, abolishing all by which her nature lived, and labored to blot out her body and soul, clutch of some half-seen invisible, an ocean of terror and of sovereign might, a person and a black infinity. It seemed to cry to her without thought or word, the message of its dark eternity and the awful meaning of its silence. Out of some sullen, monstrous, vast arisen, out of an abysmal deep of grief, imagined by some blind, regardless self, a consciousness of being without its joy, empty of thought, incapable of bliss, that felt life blank, and nowhere found a soul. The voice to the dumb anguish of the heart conveyed a stark sense of unspoken words. In her own depths, she heard the unuttered thought that made unreal. So it's clear this terrible experience.
Thank you.
Oh, yes. This terrible abyss of blackness, swallowing up the whole world, ending the fable. It's as if all that joy that she's experienced, the finding of her soul, was just an illusion. This is a rolling surge of silent death, and it's swallowing up the whole world. It seems to even forbid her own existence, abolishing all by which her nature lived. An ocean of terror and of sovereign might, a person and a black infinity. It seems to have risen up out of some sullen, monstrous vast, some great darkness. A consciousness of being without its joy, empty of thought, incapable of bliss, that felt life blank and nowhere found a soul. All this gets embodied in a voice that expresses to the dumb anguish of her heart. Savitri is suffering to experience all this, but it transmits a sense of unspoken words. Deep within her, she hears the unuttered thought. It's not put into words, and yet it has this message has the effect of making the whole world and all life seem unreal to her. So what does it actually say? Then.
But it occurred suddenly, without any reason.
Yes, it's just come out of nowhere, this blackness. It's the very contradiction of what she was feeling before. It's a challenge to her very existence.
What is the meaning of all negative absolute?
all negating absolute. So that's now what she's experienced, as if there's an absolute existence which says no to everything, denies everything, life, world, truth, light, everything. It simply says no. All that is unreal. It's just your imagination. Forget it. So this now is the voice of that all-negating absolute. Yes. Helmut, will you read?
Who art thou who claims thy crown set the bird, fusion of space, the earth, and personal godhead for the animal body of the impressive? Hope not to be happy in a world of pain, and dream not listening to the unspoken word, the desolate inexpressible way, transcending the new superconscious heart to give a body to the unknown, or for a sanction to thy heart's delight, when the bliss, the silent, still speech, profaning its air and promise, or calling to thy chamber the divine and secret call, tasting a human joy. I have created all I devour. I am in the dark, terrible mode. I am curly, black, naked, and hurt. I am minor, and the universe is my chief. I lay waste human happiness with my breath, and slay the will to live, joy to be, that all may pass back into nothingness, and only by eternal, for only the blank eternal, all else is shadow and flesh and mind's bright glass, mind, hollow mirror, which ignorance sees, splendid figure of its own whole self, and dreams it sees a glorious solid world. O soul, invent of man's thoughts and hopes, thy self-invention of the moments, illusion center or subtle apex upon at last know thyself, from vain existence cease.
So this is the challenge of the darkness. Who are you, Savitri, claiming to be a separate individual in the world, a soul? It's just an illusion. Your soul has no reality. There's no such thing as a personal godhead on this ignorant globe in the animal body of imperfect man. Don't hope to be happy in such a world, no? This world which is full of pain. And don't think you've got these illusions, you're listening to the unspoken word and you're dazzled by this inexpressible ray of light. Don't hope that you can go beyond the realm of the silent superconscious and give a body to what is unknowable. And don't think for a moment that you can burden with bliss the silent still supreme and ask it to give a sanction to say yes to your heart's delight, that you can call into your chamber the divine and sit with God tasting a human joy like some of the heroes in the ancient legends. No, don't have these illusions. I, this dark absolute, I have created all and I'm going to swallow everything up. I am death and I'm the dark, terrible mother of life. I'm Kali, black and naked in the world, and I'm Maya, the power of illusion, and the universe is my cheat, my trick on you all, this illusion that I'm presenting to you all. With my breath, I lay waste all human happiness, and I slay the will to live in people, the joy to be, so that everything can go back into nothingness. And only the eternal and absolute will remain. Because, he says, the only the blank eternal can be true. What is complete emptiness, eternal, infinite emptiness. Everything else is just a product of the mind. All else is shadow and flash in mind's bright glass. Mind's mirror, mind, is a hollow mirror in which the ignorance sees a splendid figure of its own false self, and dreams it sees a glorious solid world. That's all illusion and nonsense. Oh soul, you are inventing of man's, inventing all human thoughts and hopes. But you yourself are an invention of the moment's stream, the center of an illusion or the high point of an illusion. Listen to me, hear my voice, know who and what you are, and then stop existing, cease to exist. Samatha?
Shadow of the negating absolute, the intolerant darkness feathers searching tongues and adds in her the formidable voice. It left behind her inner world, laid waste, a barren silence weighed upon her heart. A kingdom of delight was there no more. Only her soul remained, its empty state, awaiting the unknown eternity. Then from the heights a greater voice came down, the word that touches the heart and finds the soul. The voice of light after the voice of night. The cry of the artist who heaven's big light. A might of storm chased by the might of the sun. O soul, spare not thy kingdom to the foe. Consent to hide thy royalty of bliss. Lest time and fate find out its avenues and beat the thunderous knock upon the gates. Hide whilst thou comes thy pleasure of separate self behind the luminous rampart of thy neglect, still of a vaster and buyer it grows past. But not for self alone the self is born. Content abide not with one conquered one. Adventure all to make the whole world thine, to break into greater kingdoms turn thy course. Fear not to be nothing that thou mightst be all. Ascend to the emptiness of the supreme, that all in thee may reach its absolute. Accept to be small and human on the earth, interrupting thy newborn divinity, that man may find his utter self in God.
Thank you. So the first effect is a utter devastation. In Savitri's, when that voice stops echoing in her being, it leaves behind her whole inner world laid waste like a desert. And a barren silence weighs upon her heart. Kingdom of delight was there no more. Only her soul remained, its emptied stage. That's also been left completely bare. It's waiting to hear the unknown eternal will. So then, from the heights.
That is for me something what is here described, what we experience in our daily life when this influence from outside comes in us. And I more and more understand how she will be emphasizes that we have to silence the mind to handle it.
Thank you. But then a greater voice comes, no? The word that touches the heart and finds the soul, the voice of light after the voice of night. That cry of the abyss, that darkness, draws a reply from the higher levels of consciousness, from heaven. It's as if a big black storm has been chased away by the power of the sun coming out from behind the clouds. And this is this message of hope. It's quite a complex message which she's given now. She's told, O soul, bear not thy kingdom to the foe. You've established a kingdom of happiness in your being by discovering your soul. Now don't expose that secret happiness to everything else. Keep it secret. Consent to hide thy royalty of bliss, this wonderful experience that you've had, so that time and fate don't find out its avenues, the way to enter it into that kingdom of bliss. They would come and beat with thunderous knock on your doors, just what Margaret's talking about, forcing its way in. Hide whilst thou canst, as long as you can, hide this treasure of separate self that you've experienced. keep it hidden behind the luminous rampart. The ramparts are like the defenses around a city, the walls. But these are walls of light. Keep all that hidden until it can grow part of a greater empire. He's making a kind of promise, this voice. Keep everything closed, secret, confidential within yourself. You don't have to share this with anybody, but if you can keep it quietly within yourself, I will show you the way to an even greater realization. And the voice continues, the heavenly voice. He says, not for self alone, the self is one. You haven't made this discovery for yourself. And don't be satisfied with this wonderful discovery of the soul that you've had. That's just one realm, one kingdom which you've conquered. Almost like a gambler, he says, adventure all to make the whole world thine. You can set aside this wonderful experience you've had and make room for an even more wonderful one, to break into a greater kingdom, or into greater kingdoms turn thy force, not just one conquered realm. And he says, fear not to be nothing, that thou mayst be all. Assent, accept the emptiness of the Supreme, that all in thee, everything in you, may reach its absolute. It tells her, accept to be small and human on the earth, interrupting thy newborn divinity, so that humanity, that human beings may find this utter self in God. Perhaps when we have these wonderful inner experiences, there is an urge to share them or to spread them. But this voice is warning Savitri, not to do that. Keep everything very, very quiet, private within you, and greater things will develop from it. And then he gives her a very personal message. He says, if for thy own sake only thou hast come, an immortal spirit into the mortal's world, to found thy luminous kingdom in God's dark, in the inconscience realm, one shining star, one door in the ignorance opened upon light. Why hadst thou any need to come at all, if it's just for your own personal realization?
Thank you, Shonara. Thank you so much for what you tell in the beginning of the description of this chapter. I understand. Thank you. That's all.
Then he tells her why she's on earth. Thou hast come down into a struggling world to aid, to help a blind and suffering mortal race to open to light the eyes that could not see, to bring down bliss into the heart of grief, to make thy life a bridge twixt earth and heaven. That's why you have come here. And if what you want to do is to save the toiling universe, you have to feel the vast universal suffering as your own. You have to bear the sorrow that you want to heal. The day bringer, the messenger who's heralding the day, must walk in deep, darkest night. He who would save the world must share its pain. If he knows not grief, how shall he find grief's cure? If far he walks above mortality's head, if he lives in his immortality and doesn't share the sufferings of those who are subject to ignorance and death, how will the mortal be able to reach that too high path? It's only if they see one of their own kind rising up to the highest levels that they will be able to identify with it. If one of theirs they see scaling heaven's peaks, men then can hope to learn that Titan climb. God must be born on earth and be as man, that man, being human, may grow even as God. He who would save the world must be one with the world. All suffering things contain in his heart's space and bear the grief and joy of all that lives. His soul must be wider than the universe and feel eternity as its very stuff, rejecting the moment's personality, know itself older than the birth of time. Creation, an incident in its consciousness. Arcturus and Belphegor, grains of fire circling in a corner of its boundless self. The world's destruction, a small transient storm in the calm infinity it has become. Anybody would like to ask anything?
Yeah, this line 158, this word I find discordant. Emptiness of, he's talking of all positive things about Supreme.
Yes.
And then he says, ascend to the emptiness of the Supreme. So I find emptiness more towards darkness than towards the Supreme.
Yes. Fear not to be nothing, that thou mayest be all. Ascend to the emptiness of the Supreme. I think what he's telling, and we'll come, it's told in more detail in the following lines, that you really have to accept to be nothing in order to become all. When Savitri was just approaching that cave, which is the home of the soul, she had an experience like that of utter emptiness. That was a good preparation then for all those wonderful experiences and revelations that she would have in the cave where she would find her soul. So now he's reminding her of that, and that you have a mission to do, but you have to prepare for that mission by just emptying yourself, becoming completely open. Fear not to be nothing, that thou mayest be all.
So there's a positive emptiness, which is a type of receptivity, but this other thing is that negation.
Yes.
It wipes things out in a negative way. That's what.
Yes. Not. And here they're contrasted, these two things. And she had that terrible negating experience, and now she's being told that's not so disastrous. Accept that emptiness, because it can be filled with many greater things.
But still he calls it the foe, no? Bear not thy kingdom to the foe.
Right, yes. So don't go showing your wonderful inner realizations. You're just inviting attack if you do that. Shall we read a little further? Yes. These are stars in the distant universe. And it says, of course, they are actually probably galaxies, enormous galaxies. But you have to widen yourself so much through this emptiness. You will find the way to widen yourself so much that those huge galaxies full of stars will only be like grains of fire in a tiny corner of yourself, they say.
I need to understand you why this voice saying consent to hide thy volatility, go with you, please.
What's the question?
The question is, I don't understand. Line is 147, consent to hide thy volatility, go with you, please. Why the voice is saying?
Yeah, I think what he's telling her is, we might have a wonderful experience of the realization of the psychic being. We shouldn't go shouting it from the housetops. It's better to keep it calm and quiet. Otherwise, by sharing, you're weakening the experience itself, and also you're inviting attack, you're inviting interference.
And before you think about
Yes, to everything that is hostile to the fullness of the soul. So keep it hidden.
Yeah, you are part of the bigger things.
And you will be able to become part of much greater things. This is a long canto and full of experience, amazing, especially at the end. And these are ways of widening, complete widening, in order to be able to identify with the whole universe, not just one's own little person.
And the voice says that bless time and fate, find out its avenues, and beat this thunderous knock upon thy feet.
I think that's what Margaret was talking about, the way that the outer world wants to force itself on you.
So let it
So the quieter you can be, the less likely that is to happen. You can live in that quietness and not invite big disturbances from outside, I think.
Yes, that's why he called it an otherwise time and fate. Mm. Find its avenues. It can find its way towards you. Mm. And be
towards your discovery.
Others not.
Otherwise.
You know, you have either a small poke or a push or a kick in the butt, you're in trouble.
Yeah, but then if you be ready for the pain, she's saying afterwards. Yes. For the pain, you also have
penis. Yes, I think this is the beginning. Well, before you even have the full realization, you have to be very careful.
We've just got a few minutes and I think Zek's going to play some beautiful music.
Yes, yes.
But maybe I would just read to the end of the section. It's not far now. No? I'm going to start reading on page 537 at line 186. Oh, we read this. No, didn't we? Then I'm going to start reading at line 198. If thou wouldst a little... If you want to help the world, if thou wouldst a little loosen the vast chain, draw back from the world that the idea has made, thy mind's selection from the infinite, thy senses gloss on the infinitesimal's dance, then shalt thou know how the great bondage came. Banish all thought from thee and be God's void. Again, it's an emptiness. No? Be God's emptiness. Then shalt thou uncover the unknowable and the superconscient, conscious, grow on thy tops. Infinity's vision through thy gaze shall pierce. Thou shalt look into the eyes of the unknown. Find the hid truth in things seen null and false. Behind things known, discover mysteries rear. Thou shalt be one with God's bare reality and the miraculous world he has become, and the diviner miracle still to be, when nature, who is now unconscious God, translucent grows to the eternal's light. Her seeing, his sight, her walk, his steps of power, and life is filled with a spiritual joy, and matter is the spirit's willing bride. Consent to be nothing and none. Dissolve time's work. Cast off thy mind. Step back from form and name. Annul thyself that only God may be. So this is a new command that has been given to Savitri. There's been a whole series of commands. This is the newest one, no? And it will take her on the next stage of the journey, which we can take up next week. Thanks to Sri Aurobindo.